From the authentic soul of Bernie Siegel, MD, comes Mind Health Matters, a show that reflects Bernie's passion to reach people struggling with all of life's challenges, not just the physical ones, so that each person can live life fully with the understanding that, as Bernie reminds us, we only have today. Believing that we are all here to love one another, each in our own unique way, Bernie has crafted eternal truths and the timeless wisdom of the ages. Join Bernie as he shares his powerful journey through life while offering us special nuggets of his sacred wisdom.
Welcome to the show, Mind Health Matters, with Dr. Bernie Siegel, infamously known for all the good work that he has done for the universe, for humanity, in healing ourselves. And this show is Dream Vision 7 radio broadcast here at 1510 AM WMEX Boston. You can hear Bernie's show every first Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here. And you can also hear his show on our own syndicated station, Dream Visions, all one word with an S on the end, the number 7, radio.com, Wednesday through Friday, 12 a.m. and 12 p.m. Eastern. And we're fortunate enough to have the three of us together today, as we call ourselves the Radioactive Family. So good day, Dr. Bernie.
Thank you very much, Deb.
And you're welcome. And good day, Lionel. Catch
you. It's great to be with both of you. Wonderful.
Yes, yes. And so we have some beautiful love energy today. And we're actually going to be talking about the power of love and a couple of stories that that Bernie has in mind. So, Bernie, let's start with the power of love, or the healing power of love.
I was just thinking, I often say that I became a doctor for healthy reasons. Because really, when I was trying to decide on a career, I was an artist as a child, but I didn't know you could earn money as an artist. I had no idea that artists sold their paintings, because I was just doing it as a hobby, you might say. I didn't know the art world. So I thought, well, you want to use your hands then. So you could become a surgeon. You know, you like people. You like fixing things. Science is interesting. You could put it all together, become a doctor, become a surgeon. I thought, that's wonderful. Then you become a surgeon, and what do you realize? You can't fix everything. You can't cure everything. And it really got very painful for me to go through that. And one day, one of the things that helped solve it, I did a lot of children's surgery, especially with that. I mean, I went through a stage where I was always talking to God, you know, why did you do this to kids? Why do you give them cancer? Why do you make them, you know, fall into a fire and get burned? Why would you make a world like this? And it helped me to evaluate and work out all these things in my life. But one day in the emergency room, there was a young woman who everybody thought had appendicitis, and I was called to see her, and I said, no, I don't think you have appendicitis, and we'll watch you. And I was right. She had a ruptured ovarian cyst. It all quieted down. She got better, went home. A year or two later, around Christmas time, the family had a big fire in the fireplace. The sister of the young lady I saw in the emergency room tripped and fell into the fire. She put her hands out to stop it, you know, to hold her back, and her hands and arms and part of her chest were the areas that were burned the most severely. And she had been a musician, so she needed, you know, her hands and fingers, and it was a disaster.
Oh, boy.
They brought her to the emergency room, and they called me because I had taken care of her sister. And so we admitted her to the hospital, and I began to take care of her burns. And every day when I'd walk into her room to work on her, she'd scream at me, I hate you. I hate you. And I thought, I didn't become a doctor for the kids to scream at me, I hate you. I mean, it really broke my heart. Her mother told me many years later that one day I said to her, well, maybe someday you'll love me. I know the kind of person I am, that I probably did say that. But I said, I can't remember ever saying that, because it just broke my heart every morning. And when Madeline got discharged in the hospital, she started coming to the office where I was continuing to take care of her over a prolonged period with the scars and all kinds of things. And one summer morning, she came in. It was like 90 degrees outside, and she had a long-sleeve turtleneck sweater on. I said, Madeline, what is wrong with you? It's 90 degrees, and you're wearing a turtleneck long-sleeve sweater? And she said, I'm ugly. And she wanted to hide all her scars. A little while later, she came in and said, you know, I really need a job this summer. I knew that I could get her a job at a local nursing home where they had to wear a uniform. In other words, the staff wore uniforms, short sleeve, open neck, so forth. And I said, I can get you a job, and you go over there and talk to them. I didn't tell her about the uniform, but she went over, and she needed the job, and she took it, and then she was in the uniform. And then a few more weeks go by, and Madeline comes into the office. Well, how's your job going? Nobody noticed. I said, what are you talking about? Nobody noticed my scars. Nobody says anything about it. And I said, Madeline, when you're giving love, you're beautiful. And then the years go by. And one day the phone rings. Dr. Siegel, yes? Who is this? It's Madeline. What is it, Madeline? My father died, and I'm going to get married. I want you to be my father. That, what a gift.
Right. That erased all heart. Those times when she was little.
And then, even more, the night of the wedding, she said, you know, I want to have you dance with me after the wedding, you know, the father-daughter. So I got up to go and dance with her, and the band started playing Kenny Rogers. Through the years, you never let me down. You turned my life around.
Yeah.
And boy,
beautiful.
I tell you, you never forget those moments.
And you must have been just overflowing with love.
Yeah. How that heals you. And Madeline became a nurse besides, so she's out there, you know, helping others as well. And I've seen this. I can't help, you know, telling stories, but, you know, one day I was giving a lecture and I listed survivor qualities, which is, you know, you can ask friends and family for favors or help if you need it. And another is that if you don't want to do something, you can say no. You know, you're not just trying to please everybody. A lot of nurses have a problem saying no when their friends and family ask for favors. But after I get home, after the lecture, to a lot of students, the phone rings. Dr. Siegel, yes, I was at your lecture today, and I want to go to nursing school, and I need help paying tuition. Would you help me? She said, you said people can say no, but there's no reason not to ask. And I said, look, if you had, you know, the guts to call me up and ask for me to pay your tuition, you're damn right I'm going to do it. Because, I mean, I couldn't help but respect her for having, you know, that kind of courage and audacity. So we paid her tuition. And then, this is the gift, though, you see. I get a phone call. Dr. Siegel, yes, I've graduated from nursing school. I have a job now, and I can pay you back, or we can start a scholarship for other students.
Oh, wow.
And you know what I voted for.
The scholarship.
Of course. And now, the one, well...
No, is this another, Becky, the story about Becky?
Yeah, Becky's next, but I wanted to precede that with one short one, because I had a young woman in the office who was suicidal, and I was letting her know I cared about her so she would hopefully then care about herself. And one day she said to me, you're my CD. I said, what are you talking about? I'm a CD. She said, you're my chosen dad. And so that's a term that stayed with me that I began using with people. I said, look, you need a father? I'll be your father. You know, for them to know that somebody cared about them. And as I say, it doesn't mean I like what they're doing, but I let them know I love them. And then one day, this is a few years ago, I come into the house, there's a message on the answering machine. So I push the button and it says, Dr. Siegel, do you have Jack Kevorkian's phone number? I want to be dead. I have a brain tumor. My father has sexually abused me. I want to be dead. And I called and I said, I don't have Jack Kevorkian's phone number. And I love you. You're a child of God. Why do you want to be dead? I said, Becky, that was her name, Becky. I said, draw a picture for me of yourself and then just draw some scene and mail them to me. And then we'll talk. And I got the pictures. One was a picture of her face with dots all over it. I said, what are the dots? Oh, that's how many times my father did it.
How many times what?
My father did it.
Oh.
Abused her. And the other was a tree with a big black knot hole in it. And I knew that the tree represented her life, and those were the years that all this went on. And then there was another picture. I mean, when I mentioned her face, but there were no features on the face. And she said, I'm a nobody. And, you know, I kept talking to her about my loving her, caring about her. And she didn't commit suicide and kept going. And one of the things I told her to start a new life. I said, pick a new name. And that was, you know, the no coincidences. She picked the name Rosie. And what's my mother's name? Rose.
Mm.
So I told her what a special name that was. And she's become a new person. Really, these are her words. It took me 11 years. You have helped to shape who I am and what's important. I will try to make my middle name Rose by December of this year. I think she means legally. I will make it by December 12th. That's the day I became a Lang. That's her last name. You are important to me, and I love you for taking care of me all these years. I'm proud to say you are my friend, and every doctor I see, I tell them I know you. That impresses them. And she calls me B-Dad, because I often sign the email that way. And again, I can be tough with her, too. She's going to have some more brain surgery and so forth. But a couple of cards I got from her. One says, a smile ran across my face today because you ran across my mind. Funny how often that happens. All my love. And then this one I thought was adorable. If your world got a little sunnier every time I thought of you, you'd have a great tan by now. You know, it's just these cards that come from her. I always say more cards from your chosen children than from your biological ones.
Yeah.
But it's such a gift that she's alive. She lived in Texas, and we have met when I was out on my travels. You know, we made sure we connected and got to know each other personally. And those are the important things, I think, in life.
Right.
That when we touch somebody, how it changes them, and then how that love goes on. You know, it's never ending.
And fills you up as well.
Yeah, it's like ripples in the ocean. They just keep touching and going on and on.
Yes.
You know, here, the last sentence in this letter, talking about a brain surgery, thank you for the love you have given me and continue to give in spirit since I live eons away from Connecticut. I plan on living after surgery. But she needed to say that to you. Thank you, Dad. I mean, there's no longer the desire to end her life, but a desire to contribute to life. And
right.
That power of love in the midst of all, you know, disasters. That's why I love listening to classical, you know, country, western, and spiritual stuff when I'm driving in the car. You know, that... whether you call it God or anything else, you know, standing there, or he's not heavy, he's my brother, you know, when you're carrying someone. It's just what we can do for each other.
Exactly. Lionel, what are your thoughts?
Well, unfortunately, I'm having trouble hearing Bernie, although I get a word here and there, but he's almost faded out. So I'm not going to be able to, I mean, I do get the idea of the stories he's telling. They're beautiful, heartwarming, and just incredible. You know, I've talked about love with some people in some discussions, and just the other day, people asked me, well, how do you define love? And I thought that was rather interesting because it may not be what we think it is. So I was wondering what Bernie's ideas of the definition of love might be.
Well, can you hear me if I raise my voice, by the way?
Now I can hear you. Now I can hear
better.
You.
Okay. Yeah. The because I get into a trance, and then, you know, my voice goes. But
yes.
I can remember working with Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, and her comment was, and with her Swiss accent, Borny, love is giving with no expectations.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's a good definition. You know, you are giving,
so is that
and
unconditional?
You're not expecting anything in return.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, unconditional.
Yeah. And then that means, I mean, I know that if I give love, I feel good doing it. But
yes.
You're not looking for a reward for yourself, and you're just trying to help the world, you know, give it something. The,
right.
I mean, another way I define it, because in one of our books called The Book of Miracles, I felt that when these wonderful things happened for people was when they, what I call, chose life. And by that, I meant that they chose life-enhancing activities. So it helped their life, but it also helped everyone else's life. There was nothing selfish about it. And I think when we all choose life, choose to do things in a life-enhancing way, you know, to be instruments of God's, I mean, whatever way you want to define it, that's when amazing and wonderful things happen that I always say are not a coincidence.
Right. Right. And we are love. We're created out of love. So we
right.
are love. That all resonates within us. And the journey here on Earth is getting back to that love that we already are.
Yeah. I know that Bernie was really talking about, when he's talking about love and how, you know, he's relating the stories of these patients and people he's known. He's really talking about a connection that he's formed. And I think from what you said about Elizabeth Kubler-Ross of, unconditional love is that even if that connection is feeling good that you're loving and giving to someone and you don't get it returned, it's still a connection that you value and it changes you for the better.
Right.
Yeah. I can't help it, but I keep a couple of quotes on my desk. I mean, if I had all the important quotes on my desk, the place would be filled with pieces of paper. But this was from Leo Rosten. I cannot believe that the purpose of life is to be happy. I think the purpose of life is to be useful, to be responsible, to be compassionate. It is above all to matter, to count, to stand for something, to have made some difference that you lived at all. So maybe, Lionel, you should change the happiness clubs,
Bernie,
to the useful
Bernie,
clubs.
Here's the thing. I got to tell you. If you do all the things that you just mentioned, you're definitely going to be happy.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, the happiness is a side effect. And that's why I'm
Yeah,
mean,
yeah.
Yeah. See, I have to also, a play written by William Saroyan, whom I love, The Time of Your Life. I'll just read the first and last sentences. In the time of your life live, so that in that good time there shall be no ugliness or death for yourself or for any life your life touches. And it finishes with, in the time of your life live, so that in that wondrous time you shall not add to the misery and sorrow of the world, but shall smile to the infinite delight and mystery of it.
Mm. And there's a lot of mystery.
Yeah, the full pages. There's just such a wonderful page. Do you mind if I read it? Because it's just, you can't summarize
it.
I'd
love to hear it.
Yeah, I as well.
All right.
Go right ahead. The listeners would as well.
Seek goodness everywhere. And when it is found, bring it out of its hiding place and let it be free and unashamed. Place in matter and in flesh the least of the values, for these are the things that hold death and must pass away. Discover in all things that which shines and is beyond corruption. Encourage virtue in whatever heart it may have been driven into secrecy and sorrow by the shame and terror of the world. Ignore the obvious, for it is unworthy of the clear eye and the kindly heart. Be the inferior of no man, nor of any man be the superior. Remember that every man is a variation of yourself. No man's guilt is not yours, nor is any man's innocence a thing apart. Despise evil and ungodliness, but not men of ungodliness or evil. These understand. Have no shame in being kindly and gentle, but if the time comes in the time of your life to kill, kill and have no regret. In the time of your life, live, so that in that wondrous time you shall not add to the misery and sorrow of the world, but shall smile to the infinite delight and mystery of it. And I may add, as I think of that, a minister, this is a true story in the book Modern Day Parables by William Osler. A minister and his two teenage sons went to Korea. He was going to work in a church, like, for the summer. And he was there, and for one weekend, he went off to work with some lepers, and his sons stayed where they were, in, you know, their apartment. When he came back after the weekend, they told him his sons had been murdered.
Wow.
And they were able to find the murderer, and he stayed while they brought him to trial. And at the trial, of course, he was, you know, guilty. And the judge was about to add, you know, the sentence when the minister got up, and he said, because of what his sons had taught him about being loving and caring, he walked down to where the criminal was, sat down next to him, put his arm around him, and said to the judge, let me take him home with me. What's the, you know, the point of taking another life? He can't replace my sons, but he could give me something. And he took the guy, and they walked out of the courtroom. And it ended with everyone sat there in stunned silence. I mean, I think they were also stunned that nobody even thought of stopping him, because it was just so unbelievable to see him do that. But again, you know, I know more and more stories that I keep hearing or reading about where people show love to even somebody breaks into your apartment. Think of saying to them, you know, you look so thin and hungry. Let me get something for you to eat. I mean, this is a thief. And what does he do? He sits down and has dinner and became a part of the lady's family. But I always say, be the love warrior. Love is a weapon. I'd rather die loving somebody and sharing that love, even if they're the ones who take my life. I would rather die loving them. Yeah, because I know they're going to end up feeling a hell of a lot more guilty and may make a change in their life than I'm screaming, I hate you, you son of a bitch, you know, and all that. That's what they're expecting. But when you look up and say, I love you, that's when they don't know what to do.
Bernie, is loving difficult?
No, because I feel that everybody's wounded and everybody's got troubles. And those who aren't loving were brought up without love. The opposite of love, by the way, is not fear and hate. It's rejection, abuse, you know, indifference. It's not having anybody value you or let you know you're worth anything. And
although,
I may add, that's why we see all the murders.
Yeah.
Revenge. I mean, this is a line from East of Eden by John Steinbeck. We all experience rejection. With rejection comes a desire for revenge. With revenge, guilt, and there is the story of mankind.
Right. But there still is choice.
That's
right. No matter what your childhood has been like, you still can make a choice to go in a different path.
I mean, yes, we have a choice. But when you've been hypnotized by parents who say, you're nothing, you embarrass us, you're never going to accomplish anything, it's hard to make a choice and look in the mirror and say, oh, I'm a handsome, beautiful, wonderful person. Parents are the problem.
Yeah, it's a lifelong journey of healing within. But you do make that choice, because I've had a tumultuous childhood.
Yeah.
So you make a choice. After a while, you're tired of being a victim.
Yeah,
and so you get connected to God, the light, and you decide to do inner healing.
Yes.
And then you become the most wonderful, loving person.
I know two women. One had breast cancer. The other had scleroderma, an autoimmune disease.
Hold that thought,
all right.
Please.
When
hold
we come
that
back,
thought.
I'll tell you two more stories.
All yes, right. I want to hear about that, and I know Lionel as well
yes.
wants to hear.
Yes.
So we'll be back in a moment, everyone. Don't go away. More with Dr. Bernie Siegel, Lionel Ketchian, and Deborah Bove on the Mind Health Matters Show.
Dr. Bernie Siegel's writings and the 12 books he's published so far reflect his passion to reach people struggling with all of life's challenges. His latest, A Book of Miracles, inspiring true stories of healing, gratitude, and love, is both riveting and belief-expanding. Bernie has produced wonderful resources for everyone, like 365 Prescriptions for the Soul, daily messages of inspiration, hope, and love, and faith, hope, and healing. Bernie's books also include those like Love, Magic, and Mud Pies, a great resource for parents, and delightful, loving stories like Buddy's Candle to help children of all ages cope with the loss of a loved one, be it a pet or a parent. To purchase Bernie's books, CDs, or DVDs, go to BernieSiegelMD.com. And while you're there, empower the mind, body, and spirit with Bernie's heartwarming articles.
Join Dr. Bernie Siegel on Mind Health Matters every first Sunday at 8 p.m., all part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network. Bernie will draw from his inspirational personal journey, offering us special nuggets of his sacred wisdom. Listen in as Bernie reminds us to be fully engaged in life.
The Dream Vision 7 Radio Network presents Kids for Love. It's a project, a mission, and a radio show. Come join Deborah Bove and her young co-hosts every second Sunday at 6 p.m. as we celebrate kids making a difference. We invite other kids to join in for the spirited conversation filled with creative ideas and possibilities to start their own mission. Let's raise the bar together and cultivate a kinder world by getting inspired to help others in need. Kids for Love Project, celebrating kids that empower others. That's every second Sunday at 6 p.m.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to Mind Health Matters with Dr. Bernie Siegel. And I want to put out to everyone listening, whether it's today, next week, or next year, to connect with Dr. Bernie. You can go on his site. It's Bernie Siegel, SIEGELMD.com, just as it sounds, BernieSiegelMD.com, and you can send him a message. All his writings and articles are there, so enjoy. And then if you'd like to connect with the Happiness Club via Lionel Ketchian, our co-host, then you can go on Happiness Club, just as it sounds, happinessclub.com. And if anyone out there would like to save on Bernie's books, his son and daughter-in-law actually have a bookstore, which is Wisdom of the Ages is the website, wisdomoftheages.biz, B-I-Z. So remember that. And in the code 27, when you're shopping and checking out, you put in code 27. In the comment box, and you'll get 15% off of all of Bernie's items. And so before the break, Bernie started sharing about an individual, another story.
Right.
She had cancer.
Yeah, I may say to people, always tell stories. An author said, the only thing truer than the truth is a story. And I found when I told stories to doctors, they felt less threatened, see, because if they didn't believe in what I was telling, they could say that's an anecdote, that's a case history. But if I said this was in such and such a journal, here's a statistic, then they had to battle with me. That was poorly controlled. What journal was that? But so tell stories. They change people.
Yes.
And these two stories, one lady named Mary who had cancer and started coming to our group, and heard me, you know, it's like listening to this program about love, 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 you know. And she said, Bernie, my parents are alcoholic, abusive. I say I love you to them. They don't even answer me. You know, it's all nonsense what you're talking about. But she kept saying I love you to them. I didn't know it, but she did. And then one day, about 3 months after she joined our group, she came in with a smile. I said, "What happened, Mary?" "I was late for work today. I ran out of the house. My parents are screaming, 'You forgot something.'" I said, "What? I got all my papers, my books, my pocketbook. What is it?" "You didn't say I love you today." And she said, "We were hugging and crying in the street." The healing that happened at that moment. And so my advice to everybody is, you got somebody who's driving you nuts, call them, email them, send them a card, I don't care. But for 3 months, let them know I love you every day. Then skip a day and see if you get a phone call asking, "Are you okay? I didn't hear from you today."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and the other woman named Susan, her parents were alcoholics, both committed suicide. They told their children to kill themselves, too.
Wow.
And her sister did, drove a car into a stone wall. Susan said she tried once but didn't kill herself, didn't do it right. And her parents were still alive when she tried, and they were very upset that she didn't get it right and kill herself. I mean, it's just unbelievable. Mm. She came to my office, and when I say an autoimmune disease, she had such rage and anger in her that she kept all bottled up. And so it took its effect on her body. She was tearing her own body apart. And I didn't know what to do for her, which was the best thing, because I just sat there listening to this horrible story. I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm a surgeon running support groups, and she came to talk. And I think that was the best thing that ever happened, because by sitting there with my mouth open, staring at her, she emptied herself out, if you know what I mean. All the rage, all came out. It wasn't me saying, "Here, take this pill, do this, go here, do that." I didn't know what to tell her, so I listened. And she eventually emptied it out. And she is still alive today, way past, outlive your doctor after your doctor tells you when you're going to die. She's still around and has become my teacher. And this is from a letter maybe 20 years ago after she had made the shift. She said, "I had no control over the parents who raised me or the experiences in my life. But when I let love into my prison, it changed every negative item in it, meaning the experiences in my life, and turned them into something meaningful." Boom. Mm-hmm. And what a
difference. That's powerful.
Wow, it's so powerful.
Alive today, and as I say, a wonderful person. We still meet occasionally and talk and share. Her, what she was able to do, is within all of us. To be able to forgive, to be able to have faith, to let God become a part of your life, and a big part of why she doesn't, die. The doctors at this point find it hard to take care of her because she's lived so long with the disease that she shouldn't have lived this long with, and had so many, complications and things happen that it almost gets beyond what they're used to treating. But she keeps plugging ahead and going on, and it's just amazing. And she took responsibility. That's the other thing. When I would listen to her complain, that's the one response I had was, "Hey, it's how you respond and react. It isn't how terrible they were. It's what your choices are now."
There's that choice.
Mm. Yes, yes. Well, I think when she said the words, "I let love into my prison," I find those words very, very, very profound.
Yep.
And in fact, when we were going to be, talking about the healing power of love today, I was really thinking about the healing power of love for other people. I really wasn't thinking about how important it is for each of us.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, I've seen people both. I don't mean I've seen them literally, but reading about them, I did know people with AIDS who were in prison when the epidemic first came out, and there was no basic treatment. So concentration camps, where somebody decides, "I want to help all the other people who are here with me," they were far more likely to end up surviving. And the same thing in prison. When you're not worrying about your being HIV positive, but helping all the other prisoners who are, then they end up doing much better than the ones who are resentful, bitter, angry. Because, again, you have to remember, love changes your chemistry. So does fear, hate. I mean, all these things are not just emotions. They change your body chemistry.
That's right.
When you give actors scripts, and these studies have been done, I don't make up stories, and say, here's a murderer, here's the wife of the man he murdered, and they meet each other. Their immune function goes down, and all their stress hormones go up. And then when you give them a comedy, then the immune function improves, and the stress hormone levels go down. So even acting, I mean, you watch Broadway in the wintertime. If you're in a Mel Brooks production, you don't have a damn cold the whole winter. I mean it. You go right through. But if you're in Death of a Salesman, you'll have the flu in December and drop out for a few weeks, and then you feel better and you come back. You know, it's no different than our presidential candidate, Clinton. I mean, she's running all around the country doing all kinds of things in a stressful situation, and
right.
She gets pneumonia. That's not a coincidence.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And to hear the news questioning it, it's just, it is what it is.
But I have to say, you have to learn to take care of yourself, too.
Right.
You could say, I'm going to go take a rest. I'm taking a day off. Or do it out of pure love. Then it helps protect you. But still, even as one person said to me, who thought she was going to die and started doing all these wonderful things for everybody, the end of her letter is, I didn't die, now I'm so busy I'm killing myself. Help, where do I go from here?
Oh, gee.
But, see, we have to, that's why I say, you got to learn to say no and take care of yourself. So even lovers need to know you need to love yourself and
right.
go take a rest. Yeah.
And you need that quiet time for yourself to go within.
Right. Listen to your heart. I always love a line I heard from some song. Let your heart make up your mind. You know, it's like saying choose your way to love the world. Because that's, I never stop getting ideas. But that's another thought. Because, you know, he who seeks to save his life will lose it. I mean, you see, if your parents impose a life on you, what they want you to be, you know, then you lose your life. And then you have two choices. You can either quit and go live your life, pick another profession, or you can say, I'll stay in this, but I'll choose to be loving. I used to give, all these memories are coming back. When I was at the hospital, and I'd see an employee of the hospital work in a meaningful, loving way, you know, helping a patient get on the elevator, doing all kinds of little things. I'd walk over and in a gruff voice say, what's your name? And they'd look at me like, what the hell did I do? And they'd tell me their name. But then what I did was take their name and have an artist make a pin with their name on it and a beautiful rainbow behind it. And then I'd bring it to them and give it to them as a gift and say, thank you for the way you care for people. And so we created an organization in the hospital. You know, if you saw that pin, you know there was a nice person. There was a good soul. Mm. And it was like our own little group. But one day I walked up to this medical secretary who was at the nurse's station, just, you know, being so good to everybody. I said to her, what's your name? And she said, why do you want to know? I said, you're the only person who's had the courage to ask me. I want to give you a gift. You have such a wonderful effect on people. Sit down. So I sat down. She said, I've been here for 2 years. When I took the job, I hated it. So I went back to the office. I said, I can't stand these doctors and nurses. I said, I don't mind the patients, but the nurses and doctors are too much. So I quit. I'm going home. You can't. Why not? Read your contract. It says you have to give 2 weeks' notice. Okay, you got it.
Mm-hmm.
She said, I got up every day miserable for 2 weeks. The last day I went to work happy, and I noticed something. Everybody around me was happy, so I decided to come in happy, and that's 2 years ago. And that's why I think that, you know, we have choices.
Right.
You can stay and change your attitude, that's why, or you can leave. But the word attitude
Hold that thought about that attitude, worry.
Okay.
And everyone, don't go away. Stay with us more with Dr. Bernie in a moment.
Dr. Bernie Siegel's writings and the 12 books he's published so far reflect his passion to reach people struggling with all of life's challenges. His latest, A Book of Miracles, inspiring true stories of healing, gratitude, and love, is both riveting and belief-expanding. Bernie has produced wonderful resources for everyone, like 365 Prescriptions for the Soul, daily messages of inspiration, hope, and love, and faith, hope, and healing. Bernie's books also include those like Love, Magic, and Mud Pies, a great resource for parents, and delightful, loving stories like Buddy's Candle to help children of all ages cope with the loss of a loved one, be it a pet or a parent. To purchase Bernie's books, CDs, or DVDs, go to BernieSiegelMD.com. And while you're there, empower the mind, body, and spirit with Bernie's heartwarming articles.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
Ask Dr. Love is now on the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network every second and fourth Sunday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Dr. Jamie Turndorf, a.k.a. Ask Dr. Love, is a psychotherapist, author, love and relationship expert who offers advice and answers to your relationship questions. Hear about Dr. Love's groundbreaking new Dialoguing with the Departed technique that enables you to reconnect and make peace with a loved one. This show is for you, the listener. And Dr. Love wants to hear from you. Call 866-338-9663 or 617-237-1234.
And we are back. And thank you, everyone, for listening to Bernie's show. Again, you can hear it every first Sunday at 8 p.m. here at 1510 a.m. WMEX Boston. And you can also hear it on our syndicated station, Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, Wednesday through Friday, 12 a.m. and 12 p.m. Eastern Time. And you can either listen online, Dream Visions, all one word with an S on the end, the number 7, radio.com, or you can listen on your iPhone, your iPad, all your mobile devices with the Google and the Apple apps. And now we're back. And before we went on the break, you were just going to talk about
attitude. Because when
yes.
I mentioned that, I just remembered another guy. After I'd given a lecture, I was walking out of the building, and a man came up to me, and on his jacket, he had a pin of the word attitude. And he said, when I am not behaving like a survivor should, my wife comes over, grabs the pin, gives it a twist, and says, honey, straighten out your attitude. And so I started having pins made with the word attitude on them also. But, again, it's a wonderful way to correct each other. You know what I mean? Not saying, you're a miserable person, you never do anything right, you're a failure, you embarrass me. That's not coaching. That's not helping anybody. You know, like some of the people I mentioned, when you tell your kids. Well, one lady said to me, I must have been a failure as a child. My parents committed suicide. It isn't her. It's them. But when you, take it on in a personal way, it's very different. And I think we have to remember that we have choices. We're not making other people make their choices, but we can help them with our words to make them feel worthy.
Right. I have a question for you, Bernie.
Yeah.
You've been with Bobby, married for, 62 years now?
This is
62, I think.
Yeah.
Yes. And okay. So the love that the two of you have for each other, and so in these so many years, do you feel that that's what has helped Bobby and yourself thrive?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, I'm in awe of our love. I mean, because I don't credit myself with it. I mean, if you know what I mean, it's hard to, it's just, it's not an intellectual, personal, it's a feeling that I have. I mean, last night I was just laughing by myself, thinking about our relationship. And of course, then I go over to her and give her a kiss and thank her. But it's just something that's within me. And I often say that to her, just looking at her face, hearing her voice. You know, when I was out traveling and lecturing, people would say, we see a change in you when you make a phone call and your wife talks to you, you know? And I know it's feeling that. I mean, that's, if you want to get into some interesting subjects in a future program, near death and past life, because when somebody said to me over the telephone, hearing how busy I was, why are you living this life? I went into a trance. So I know that Bobby and I had a past life experience, that we were in a past life. And I think we were Irish. I really do. It happened in Ireland. I mean, I'm laughing because a lot of times, you know, when an Irish family named their son after me because I had helped the woman get through her pregnancy and survive, they named him Brady. And they said, we named him after you, but he's Irish, so we're not going to say Bernie. You know? And I even brought a dog home named Brady the other day from the shelter. I don't think that was a coincidence. I walk in, the dog was there a few minutes. What's his name? Brady. I get such a kick out of those things. But, I mean, I think those are part of our consciousness. In other words, that we have the consciousness within us of those who have preceded us. I don't literally think that we're living over and over, but we're aware of what has preceded us. I always say when a five-year-old appears on stage playing a violin with a concert orchestra, you can't explain to me how you gave this kid violin lessons. You know, I think that the consciousness of a violinist is within that child. So she was able to do all these things because she was prepared for it. And,
well, all the experiences that every human has had through the thousands and thousands of years is really built into our DNA.
Right. And that's why, you know, we've been talking about love. If we all choose to love, think of what the future will be like.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, I think love might be a channel that you tune into, and then you've got your radio or television set playing, you know, on that channel, and you're benefiting from having that be your, you know, focal point, because what you focus on is what you'll experience.
Yes. But I don't know if you heard me tell this, but when I was talking to God one day, I said, I need help. What am I here to do? God said, you're a satellite dish, a remote control, and a television screen. Huh? God said, Bernie, there are many, you know, programs out there. What are you going to focus on? What are you going to tune into?
Right.
I gave you a mind. That's like your remote control. Pick a channel. See, if you pick the right channel, what program shows up on the screen or what your body then it does is revealed. So if you have an improper Lord, you'll do things in your lifetime that hurt a lot of people as well as yourself. But if you tuned into the right channel, you know, call it the love channel, then think of how you will live and what you will do for people.
Excellent.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. For me, I always say to God, stop talking in parables. I need a straight answer. But you know how people can get mad at you, even talking about religion, that Joseph Campbell said, religion is a misinterpretation of mythology. And, oh, boy, some people, you know, they hear that, they, oh, no, yeah, you know. But, again, it's the lessons we're to learn, I always feel, from religion, from people who are all preaching love, you know, love thine enemy. And I think that when we listen to the message, and don't fight over all the rules and regulations, then we're much better off.
Yes.
Agree.
Agree. So we all agree.
Absolutely.
Then there's something wrong here. But, you know, again, one of my quotes in front of me on the desk is from Jesus. It is done unto you as you believe. And I always say, why didn't people get mad at him? You know, it's like he's blaming you, see? Well, that happened because you believed. And that's, I went through that when I would say to people, you know, that there is hope, that you can accomplish things. And doctors would say to me, you're giving false hope. You're blaming your patients. But it's that eternal truth. It is done unto you as you believe. And when people have called me satanic and occult, and that includes ministers.
Really?
Yes, because if you do meditation, this one said to me, you close your eyes and meditate. How do you know Satan isn't going to take over your images?
Was that years ago that they said that?
Yeah, this was down in Tupelo, Mississippi.
Oh.
And I was going to give a lecture, so he told everybody to stay home and not go because I was a problem. But I said to him, I will give a lecture based only on quotes from Jesus. Because, and I mean this truly, that his messages are about healing. And so I can take his statements and apply them to our health today. You know, literally, even to physical disease. And it's again, it's the universal theme. And I always say to people, look for things that everybody is saying. You know, meaning the wise and informed people. You say, oh, you sound like so-and-so. Well, then it must be true if they're all saying the same thing. So whether it's a Mother Teresa, a Gandhi, you know, that they're all talking about how to survive, how to get along with each other. I always loved one of my, again, you talk about love. Mother Teresa was asked if she would please attend an anti-war rally. And she said no. And the people were all upset. But as they were about to leave, she said, however, if you ever have a peace rally, call me.
Right.
And that's
or
what
something.
I try to get across to people. When you create an enemy, be it a person, a disease, any problem, then you're giving that enemy energy.
Power.
Yeah, and power. But when you say, how can I heal my life? How can I bring love in? Then it's amazing.
Right. That's why a lot of the organizations and different events, it's all about fight and kill the disease.
Right. Yeah,
and
fight a war. Yeah.
Yes.
And then you read, loses his battle, fails. Yeah. It's not a failure to die. I mean, I'd say it's a failure to not choose life. But there was a gentleman, I forgot his name, he wrote a book about his experience in a concentration camp. But one of the things that saved his life was standing in line, and the German guard was deciding who goes to the work camp, who goes to the gas chamber, you know. And when he got up there, he just looked him in the eye and said, Ich liebe dich, I love you. And
wow.
He was not sent to the gas chamber. And the guard could tell he meant it. He really said it in that way, not trying to save his life, but he decided to be that way and to say that. And it made a difference.
Yeah, well, this is a beautiful way to end the show with that.
All right.
Do you, either one of you want to add a one-liner before we say goodbye?
Well, it was a great show, and hearing Bernie's comments on the healing power of love was very uplifting. Yeah. Thank you, Bernie.
All right, and on the refrigerator, a woman put, she was going to die of AIDS. She wrote, when you live in your heart, magic happens. And, of course, she didn't die.
Mm. Beautiful.
And magic and miracles happen in seconds.
Right.
Right before our eyes. So, well, I want to thank both of you for joining, the three of us, and Bernie for your nuggets of wisdom that you share all the time and still making such a huge difference in the world. And every listener will hear and take that within their own hearts. And you as well, Lionel, passing on the happiness every day. So
thank
I thank you, and we're honored to have you both, you know, on the station. I just have to say I'm just filled up with love right now.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And everyone out there, until the next time with Dr. Bernie Siegel, it's BernieSiegelMD.com. Bye for now.
Join us next time on Mind Health Matters with Dr. Bernie Siegel. Until then, remember, be fully engaged in life, loving every moment as your unique self. In going deep within to discover ourselves, we can also discover self-love. Then, when we let our hearts make up our minds, we connect what our bodies do so well to the power of love. We can boost our ability to grow and heal along with our self-esteem. The sense of empowerment that results from this mind-body connection is one related to self-induced healing. When you add spirit to that connection, making a mind-body-spirit connection, you nourish your soul. For more insight, go to BernieSiegelMD.com.